Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 184, Attack of the Clones, Act 1. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me today we have the Llama Sue to my Masa Meda. We have Carl LeClaire.
Jason, I'm not that skinny.
No, that is true. Or that tall.
Also accurate. the Kaminoans. What a shifty bunch.
Indeed.
But nothing shifty.
I feel like they should be living at Roswell.
Yeah, exactly. And George Lucas did say that he kind of created them as an homage to the Encounters of the Third Kind or whatever, the Steven Spielberg film. So, Jason, let's talk some... We have some fun today. We get to talk about Act 1 of Attack of the Clones, like we were talking before we started hitting, you know, we started recording. This is one of the shortest acts, I think, in a Star Wars movie. Act 1 is only about 34 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that's because Act 2 of Attack of the Clones is the meat of that movie.
Right.
Which is why, for some people, this movie fails, is because the romance doesn't work for a lot of people. But I love Act 2 of Attack of the Clones, so I can't wait to get to that. But let's jump the gun. Let's not jump the gun, and we'll start with Act 1 today. But before we do that, Jason, you had a great matchup for us at the end of the last episode where we pitted Anakin Skywalker versus Darth Vader. And got quite a few responses, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, we did. We did, and they were pretty evenly split. Want to get right into the meat of this episode, I'm not going to take time to read too many of these, maybe one or two, but I just want to get through this. On Facebook, Ubaidullah Abdul Malik says Vader. Travis Fritsch, Anakin. Jez, our buddy from Norway, says Anakin. Joe Isaac, Anakin. Stephen Jones, Anakin. Travis Magruder, also Anakin. Jessica Baker says Vader, and her son Jack gives it a draw. Joey Letson gives it to Anakin. Jesse Collins, Anakin. Michael J. Cohen, also Anakin. Kyle Taylor, Darth Vader. Clark Wilson, Anakin. Walter Onosetowitz, Vader, because of his tremendous hate towards Anakin. Jeffrey Beaumont gives it to Vader. Ian Roletta, in all caps, Vader. Michael Morris, also Vader, and he cites the Vader Down comics for that. James Bryson Grigger, Anakin. Cody Murphy, Anakin. On Twitter, at DavePisani75, also gives it to Darth Vader. At Bradley W. Hall, Darth Vader. At Dewey the Mailman, Anakin Skywalker. At KingOg9Cubits, simply says, now I am the master. Darth Vader. And at Jedi Jack, our buddy Jackson gives it to Anakin. We got an email from Ethan who says it'll be close, but gives it to Vader. And finally, a longtime listener, first time emailer, sent this in. Tim Dillon says, I've been listening for a while, but this is my first response to a poll. I will give the fight to Vader with little competition. I predict that Anakin would start the fight on the offensive, but Vader would have the skill to defend against him and the patience to wear him down. He has also been hunting and killing Jedi since his fall to the dark side, so he certainly has experience. Anakin could make a strong showing, but I think that his recklessness would ultimately be his downfall. Congratulations on a great podcast, and may the Force be with you. Well, thank you, Tim, and thank you for responding to us and getting involved with the community here, even though you've been listening for a while.
I know Tim. He's a part of our youth group.
So
he's a great kid. He's been listening for a long time, and he always, I see him before church on Sundays. He's an altar server. And he'll be standing there with his candle. And he goes, I know I'm a little late, but here's my prediction from your last matchup. I'm like, Tim, write in. You can write in. So he told me this last week. He goes, I'm finally going to write in. I go, good, do it. No, he's a great kid.
Oh, good. Good. And but that gives us a final Larian tally of 13 for Anakin Skywalker, 12 for Darth Vader, and one draw.
Wow, that is close.
It is so close.
Man, and that's what also you, 26 people. Thank you, 26 people, for taking the time to play. Thank you.
Exactly.
I'm gonna make this come down to you, Jason, because I'm giving it to Vader.
Oh.
And kind of for a lot of the same reasons folks have said, you know, Vader is, he's just so darn powerful. I think, you know, Anakin is flashy. He's quick. He's great with his blade, but he's an unstable fighter. You know, that's the reason he loses to Obi-Wan. I mean, he's a far better skilled fighter than Obi-Wan, but he loses because he kind of can't keep his cool. I think he comes a little unhinged in a fight. Whereas Vader is just so calm and collected. I mean, you just look at this guy in Empire when he just drops his blade and just starts throwing things at Luke. You know, remember in Clone Wars when Anakin's fighting Dooku and Dooku's doing that to him. Anakin is easily overpowered. So yes, Anakin is super strong and everything, but Vader has that centered power that Anakin lacks. And, you know, like Tim pointed out, he does have years of experience of hunting Jedi. You know, Anakin, for much of the Clone Wars, he's fighting like battle droids. They're not hard to defeat. You know, he defeats Dooku, but Vader's a whole new monster over Dooku. So I think Vader takes this in a close one, but I do give it to Vader. But let's get down to the wire here, Jason.
Oh my gosh.
13 to 13.
Oh,
13-13. Hey, canceled game.
Aw. Man, you get it. Oh, now the pressure is even more. Ah, gosh. Thanks, Carl. I mean, this is one that could go either way, to be perfectly honest. I thought I had a pretty good idea of what I was going to pick coming into this, and then some of the responses from people here were giving me pause, and I can see both sides of this. But there's one thing in particular that is going to sway my vote. Excuse me. And it is Palpatine's opinion of the situation. I think Palpatine is disappointed with Vader because he's not Anakin.
Mm.
He doesn't have the quite the range of force skill set that he could have as Anakin. And I know a lot of this is sort of Legends ideas, but some of it is creeping into some of the comics and also in Lords of the Sith, where Palpatine sort of ridicules Vader for trying to live up to the idea of Anakin Skywalker in terms of skill and that sort of thing, and that Vader has to keep proving himself to be effective as the Emperor's right-hand man. And while the skill sets are fairly evenly matched, Anakin's quicker, Vader's more powerful, I think it comes down to that intangible that we've talked about so many other times with the Force. And I think that gives Anakin just the slightest edge. If we ran this 100 times, I think Anakin would win 55 out of the 100, maybe 51 out of the 100. But I think Palpatine is disappointed that Vader turned out the way he did. And so I'm going to give it to Anakin in the slightest of edges. So that gives us a final tally of 14 for Anakin, 13 for Darth Vader, and one draw.
Interesting.
Ugh. You had... That was too...
Okay, sorry.
That was too much pressure on there.
Yeah. You know, I just want to, not to belay this point too long, but here's why I think you're actually wrong about the Force point, Jason. And I say this with kindness.
Of course.
But although your point is great, though, about Palpatine, I think you're absolutely right. Palpatine saw Anakin as just this font of power. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear that even in Revenge of the Sith, you know, Darth Vader will become more powerful than either of us. You know, yes. he believes that, mm-hmm. even knowing how powerful he is. And that's a great reference. You know, Lords of the Sith, he's always kind of like, he gets under Vader's skin almost, yes, as a form of test, but that's a great insight too. I think it is also to kind of showcase, like, you're a disappointment. The fact that you couldn't beat Obi-Wan mm-hmm. has severely limited you. But I don't think that intangible of the Force, I think Vader is stronger in the Force than Anakin was. And I think that's part of why Anakin fell, is because he is so oblivious to the Force in a way. Whereas Vader seems to have I don't think he has like a stronger relationship with the Force, like somebody like Obi-Wan. But I think Vader has a more concrete control over it. Mm-hmm. And so I was in New York last weekend, so I listened to some podcasts on my way there because I almost never get a chance to listen to podcasts anymore. But I finally listened to the Rebel Force Radio's audio commentary with Sam Witwer for Force Awakens. If you haven't listened to this, I highly recommend it. Sam Witwer is unbelievable. His analysis of Star Wars is, it's to me, it's unrivaled. I feel like he gets
inside information from Dave Filoni all the time.
Yeah, but I think he comes at it, like, when I finish listening to that, I'm like, oh my god, I suck as a podcast host compared to him. But
if Sam Witwer ever had his own Star Wars podcast,
everybody would listen to it.
And rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically the David Collins. He's the Dave Collins of the Star Wars mythology, in my opinion. Just as Dave Collins is to the music, Sam Witwer is to the mythology.
Yeah.
But
you imagine a Dave Collins and Sam Witwer podcast?
Well, so I finally am going back and listening, because Sam Witwer did like a series on Rebel Force Radio of all the films, mm-hmm. and their Revenge of the Sith commentary has Dave Collins as well. So I can't wait to listen to that.
Oh, yes.
That'll be like Star Wars Euphoria. But the reason I brought that up is they're talking about, you know, how, oh, you know, everybody kind of assumed that Kylo's mind probing technique was unique to him, like, except for maybe in the Clone Wars, right, with Mace, Obi-Wan, and Anakin with Cad Bane. I don't know how I didn't pick up on this. And I was talking to Joe Hogan about this the other night, and he was just like, you're an idiot for not noticing this. But Darth Vader does that in Return of the Jedi. Right? Like, so you have a twin sister, right? Mm-hmm. So the first time we actually see that Force power is in Return of the Jedi. And what Sam Witwer pointed out was, you know, Kylo clearly struggles to do it. Like, he's powerful, he can do it. But look how quickly Vader did it to somebody like Luke, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he just kind of plucked it out of him without, you know, there was no strain for him. And I was just like, man, you're right. Vader is strong with the Force. So that was a long tangent just to, you know, basically promote another podcast, tell you that there's a better podcast host out there, and to make a cool point, that's not mine.
Oh, man. It's a great point, but I'm still going to stick with the way I fell on this just because I stay by my points.
I like that. I appreciate it. We should get Sam Witwer's response because he'll trump it. Whatever he says goes would be my opinion. Oh, yeah. And I will say this. He is he can do a perfect Arnold Schwarzenegger impression. So he kept pretending to be Arnold Schwarzenegger during parts of the commentary. He'd be like, and now she's looking at the droid and she's playing with its little dangly thing. He was just, I was laughing so hard. I love Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonators. So, yeah, it was great. If you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend it.
Yes, I do as well. It is a great commentary. So, and even if you're just listening to it without watching the movie, it's amazing.
Yeah, I wasn't watching the movie. I was driving. It doesn't matter. Jason, before we hop into our topic, I just want to plug it now, folks. Stick around till the end. We have an exciting new segment to talk about at the end of the show, as mm-hmm. well as a really fun poll that Jason has for us. So stick around for the end of this episode.
Yeah. And if you've been watching our social media, we did let a quick preview of our new segment out on Facebook and Twitter. So you may stick around for the information about that, because it'll be awesome.
Ideally.
Yes, ideally. All right, well, let's get into our topic. We're going to do Act 1 of Attack of the Clones.
I believe we're going to do Act 1 of Attack of the Clones, Jason. Mm. So
that's what I said.
I'm just being difficult.
I know.
All righty.
But it's great. Because I love this movie. Everybody knows it's my favorite prequel movie.
And your second favorite Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Yes.
And primarily for Act 3, but you have to get to Act 3 through Act 1.
Right.
And Act 2. But we're talking about Act 1.
Jason, let's steer us in, will you?
Okay.
Let's pan up. For the only time
in the Galactic Senate, several thousand solar systems declared their intentions to leave the Republic. I'm sorry, I'm reading the crawl as it goes up. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to finish that. But yeah, now this is interesting. Obviously, 10 years between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. I don't think the only break that's, you know, longer. Well, a trilogy, this is the longest break
between movies. Yeah. And obviously with Episode 7 to 8 is going to be the shortest break ever.
Right. It looks like it's going to be, you know,
moments after
20 seconds.
Yeah.
20 seconds between the two.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, this is, and think about it, this is half of the time span between the prequel and original trilogy, too. I mean, it's a 20-year time gap, and this is a 10-year time gap. So this is a huge gap.
Most interesting thing about it is Padme is no longer queen. Mm-hmm. She's now a senator. And I think obviously we know Anakin's being trained as a Jedi, but Padme's obviously moved up in the realm of galactic vision. You know, she's much more visible.
Right. Yeah. She's not just some young queen on a planet that probably a lot of people don't care about. Now she's a prominent senator and a senator with a statement. She's coming back for this sole purpose of opposing a military army being created for the Republic.
Exactly.
So it's very clear, just like it was in Episode 1, the Naboo people are pacifists. You know, they're like Alderaan. They're just a bunch of hippies.
I do love the fact that they come in through the fog.
Mm.
It's a very pretty and sort of mysterious and somewhat spooky thing. The only other time we really get fog is in a swamp. Whether it's the Naboo Swamp or Dagobah.
I like
but
Dagobah.
To have fog on Coruscant, kind of cool.
Yeah, Jason, I like Dagobah.
Really?
Yep.
I don't.
I know.
It's gross.
I know. one thing I do want to say, though, about the 10-year gap, part of me, you know, I didn't like it because, again, I wish we had an older Anakin. I wish Anakin had been like 15, 16 in Episode 1, and then this was like a 4 or 5 year gap. But be that as it may, the reason I do like the 10-year gap, though, is because it does show, kind of, in a way, you know, that victory of Episode 1 has sustained for a while, right? So, like, things started, you know, because when we get to Episode 1, it's clear that for 1,000 years, things have been good in the Republic. It's been a very long golden age. But now, you know, things kind of boiled up in Episode 1, but they were, you know, they were dealt with. Everything was packaged up. We're going to be okay. But now, 10 years later, clearly that was like the first sting, and now the venom is taking hold. And I think it also says a lot, obviously, about the Phantom Menace, you know, who's still around after Episode 1. Palpatine is patient. Sidious is so patient.
Mm-hmm.
He's biding his time. There's no rush for him, which is scary. There's nothing more scary than a villain who's willing to take the time.
Right. And the interesting thing is that this whole issue with the separatist movement, which is, of course, clearly at this point, simply a social political movement, has been taking place for a while. Because Palpatine, at this point, has already exceeded his term limits as chancellor. But since the Republic wants a sense of continuity dealing with the separatist crisis, they have decided to vote to keep him in power until the crisis is over. And that's, again, still at this point, only a political social crisis. You know, it's not a military crisis yet. Of course, at the beginning here, we're building up to it becoming a military crisis because we know, you know, the corporate alliance guild, the banking clans, the trade federation all have droid armies at their disposal. And so the Republic, who doesn't have very much of a centralized military, is nervous because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like France during World War II. Mm. Yeah, but you know, right off the bat, though, again, there's you commented on the mist that they're flying through. I also like the music there too. It's very, I just call it Attack of the Clones music because you never hear it anywhere else. It does. It has like this mood of mystery to it, but not like, but like an ominous mystery. Again, that threat of episode one is still with us.
Right.
When they're flying through those clouds and we think we see Padme, but we quickly learn that she's still using doubles, even though she's not the queen. So it makes you wonder, was that just a Padme thing or is that a Queen of Naboo thing?
I think it was, this is of course Legends, but it was something that Captain Panaka put in place as a security measure when he became, you know, head of royal security on Naboo. And I think it's just something that Padme has continued to use. And Captain Typho is Captain Panaka's nephew. So
Panaka.
Yep. Panaka was originally supposed to be in Attack of the Clones, but the actor was like, no, I'm going to hold out for more money. And they're like, we'll just recast the character and create somebody new.
Yeah.
He's not that important.
Yeah. Yeah. More likely, his character was wiped out.
Ooh.
Ooh, how does that feel, Panaka?
Burn.
Oh, man. But yeah, so, you know, the movie opens with an assassination attempt. Somebody is trying to stop Padme. Because it's clear, like, somebody wants there to be a Republic army. And it's clear that, obviously, Dooku's behind that because Dooku's job, I think, as assigned by Sidious, is to start the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you start? How do you build an army? Well, you get rid of those who are opposing it.
Mm-hmm. And since Padme is one of the most visible opponents of that idea. So,
yeah. Wipe her out. But I love it, the immediate scene after that, though, where you have the Jedi kind of reporting into to Palpatine. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I just... Excuse me. Goodness gracious me.
goodness gracious me.
One thing I like is, again...
Kit Fisto's there. Sorry.
You like that.
I do.
I like how old Palpatine looks. Like, yeah, it is 10 years later, but he looks a lot more than 10 years older.
Well, I mean, look at Obama or any president.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
8 terms. It's,
yeah. You look at, you know, Obama looked so young and youthful, like his first year of presidency. By the end of the second year, I mean, the dude was gray.
right.
Yeah. And I think that's true of anybody in a role such as that, you know, with the constant stress. So I liked that. I liked that they gave Palpatine that excessive aging aspect to show that, you know, him being in office has taxed him.
Right.
And I think that's also probably a good ploy for Palpatine because it does. It gives him that kind of grandfatherly figure. You know, we get a lot of that kind of fleshed out during the Clone Wars TV series of how, you know, the populace really likes Palpatine. Because he is kind of this revered grandfather-like figure who's being, you know, worn down by the failure of the people. But he's the champion of the people at the same time.
Right.
So you get this great scene where the Jedi are confessing that the dark side is polluting everything, which is like, yeah, no duh. Clearly it's polluting everything because you're sitting right in front of Darth Sidious and you're completely oblivious. That's why I've always loved that scene because it's like you have Mace Windu and Yoda right there and they cannot sense Darth Sidious.
Right. You know, and he looks at Yoda, Master Yoda, do you really think it will come to war? And, you know, Yoda's, you know, dark side clouds everything. Impossible to see the future is. And Palpatine's like, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
No, it's not. War is coming and you just can't admit it, you know.
Yeah.
But he keeps it all hidden because otherwise Yoda and Mace Windu or any of the other Jedi there would have sensed it. I mean, Palpatine is an evil genius and a patient one and highly skilled at hiding his thoughts and motivations from the Jedi. Because he interacts with them, especially on these important matters. He interacts with them quite a bit. And of course, we'll see in the Clone Wars TV series how much he interacts with them, you know, even continuing to move forward. And it's ridiculous that even during the middle of the conflict, how no one really suspects him until it's too late.
Right. Right. And Mace Windu does, you know, Mace Windu's line to him is kind of setting up the reality that, you know, the Jedi aren't an army, you know? Mm-hmm. So again, it's just kind of that, it's a plot building point, you know, of just making it clear that if a war breaks out, the Jedi aren't soldiers, yet mm-hmm. they're going to become soldiers. You know, they become right. generals in a war they should have never been in.
Right.
So, but everything's interrupted because the Loyalist Committee is there.
Right.
I wonder why they're called the Loyalist Committee. Any idea why?
I believe, especially towards Revenge of the Sith, it's really, you know, to try and they're loyal to the Republic, but they're opposing the increased power being given to the Chancellor.
Okay.
Especially during Revenge of the Sith, there's a deleted scene where the Loyalist Committee presents the delegation of 2,000 to Palpatine, which is 2,000 delegates who signed this petition to revoke some of his emergency powers. You know, and so they're loyal to the Republic, but opposing some of the excessive power that is being delivered to the Supreme Chancellor. It's interesting, though, that Orn Free Tah is there, given what we know of him during the Clone Wars and how buddy-buddy he is with Palpatine like, going forward. Mm. Orn Free Tah is a political... he sways to the whims of the political breeze, mm-hmm. shall we say.
Yeah, it's like every candidate in office or running for office right now. But
I take offense at that.
Yeah. But he's even in Lords of the Sith, the novel, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I like when they stroll in and Padme. I've always found that line from Yoda, you know, seeing you alive brings warm feelings to my heart. Yoda mm-hmm. doesn't talk like that. I've never understood why that's there. It's so out of place. Like Yoda doesn't know Padme that well. Like it's just silly to me.
Well, I mean, do we know that? I mean,
true, but
since she became a senator, maybe she's had interactions with them.
Yeah, how many really? I mean, even at the beginning, like I should not have come back. The way that line's delivered almost insinuates that she hasn't been at Coruscant in a while. So I don't know. I mean, could be completely wrong, but I don't know. It just seems really out of character for Yoda to speak like that, in my opinion. But it's fine. It's a cute line. It's to me, it's just not Yoda.
He's part of the, you know, he's interacting in political circles. He's got to have some pleasantries, you know.
Sure.
He's saying, I'm glad to see you alive, you know. I'm glad nothing happened to you, you know, which your handmaiden, however, on the other hand, is another story. You know, you blow it up and, you know. But anyway, I'm sorry. Anyway.
Poor Corday. But she immediately levels blame at Count Dooku. You know, right. and again, we don't know where that backstory is coming from. Why would she think Count Dooku? But she immediately casts the blame his way. And it's so funny how quickly Ki-Adi-Mundi and Mace Windu jump to his aid. He is a political idealist, not a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
M'lady, you must know that Count Dooku was once a Jedi. He couldn't assassinate anyone. It isn't in his character. Shut up, Mace. You're so full of it. I hate him. you know, I mean, and that's exactly it. They immediately defend him. And, you know,
it is interesting, though, how Yoda doesn't.
Right. Yoda doesn't have anything to say about that. He just says,
you know, whatever the case is, you're still in danger. He doesn't confirm or deny her suspicions at all, though. He's like, but you're still in danger no matter what the case is. I wonder how much Yoda suspects at this point,
mm-hmm.
you know. Obviously, Yoda's in a place where he probably has a sensing on a lot of things. And since Count Dooku is now this charismatic figurehead of the Separatist movement, you know, I wonder how much he suspects of how far Dooku could go. Obviously, he has no proof of anything. Otherwise, he'd say something.
Right. Yeah. But now, you know, Palpatine responds to this assassination attempt. He capitalizes on it by setting Padme up with Anakin. You know, it's funny because he never obviously uses Anakin's name there. He just says, you know, perhaps an old friend, Master Kenobi.
Master Kenobi. Yes, exactly. He wants protection. You know, do it for me, m'lady. The thought of losing you is unbearable.
Yeah.
And it's like, you almost want to puke on those words.
Yeah. Well, here's my quandary, though. So is, if Dooku's behind the assassination attempt, which it's clear that he is Sidious the one also behind that as well? Or does Sidious hope that it fails so that he can set up this with Anakin? That's the thing to me that's just kind of puzzling, because it's like, right, you kill Padme and you get this military army, and then, yay, you can have your Republic army, you can start your clone war. But if you kill Padme, how do you seduce Anakin? So I don't know. You know, do you think Sidious is at first wanting to kill her and then just adapts and changes his plans like he's, you know, able to do on, you know, a moment's notice? Or do you think that somehow he knew the assassination attempt would fail and this would be an opportunity to put her with Anakin?
I think some of the day-to-day dealings that the Separatists have, he's leaving up to Dooku. And I feel like the assassination attempt was not originally part of Palpatine's plans. Palpatine was probably apprised of the attempt and had contingency plans for either way it went. My guess is he probably suspected Padme would suspect an attack. I mean, let's back up here. Mm-hmm. Captain Typho, his first line is, "Well, I guess I was wrong. There was no attack at all.
Yeah.
There's no trouble at all." Danger. They were obviously tipped off that there could be an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that was Palpatine's doing.
Oh, interesting.
So there you go. Maybe Palpatine becomes aware that Dooku is setting up this assassination attempt, tips off Typho, and they put into effect the decoy.
Right. Because Palpatine's probably not going to want to tell Dooku at this point that he's grooming a new apprentice.
No.
You know, so that's actually a really good point. So, you know, Dooku makes it clear, like, oh, well, I'll wipe out the person who's trying to oppose this clone war. Great. Sounds good. Hey, Captain Typho, guess what? What is it, Supreme Chancellor? You should probably put a bodyguard on that ship to be careful.
Right. Right. But the other thing is with Dooku, you know, whether the attack succeeds or fails doesn't matter. If there's an assassination attempt against one of the leading voices of opposition, it effectively nullifies their point because now they're in danger. So, you know, I think for Dooku, the attempt is all that's necessary. Whether it succeeds or not doesn't matter.
Good point.
Because it proves to those who are on the fence, we're in danger, you know. And if you oppose it, there's no one to protect you. But if we support the military action, we'll have some protection. Political machinations at work, folks.
And what about the senator from Naboo? Is she dead yet?
I'm not signing your treaty until I have her head on my desk.
You're such a good Newt Gunray.
Wow.
But Jason, we just skipped all the way to the end of Act 2. Whoops.
Whoops.
So we finally are going to get to see Anakin and Obi-Wan. Finally, what? It's been like 4 minutes, but whatever.
7 minutes into the movie.
And, you know, I think this is
I love this scene.
Yeah, I think it's the scene where it does kind of... We need more of this in this movie. Unfortunately, we don't get enough of it, but it does kind of, you know, it's trying to build the fact that there's a camaraderie between the two of them. Like, yes, Anakin is the apprentice, but there is they joke back and forth. You know, you fell into that nightmare, Master, and I rescued you, remember?
Exactly. I love the fact that he's, you know, straightening his robes and he's taking a deep breath and relax. You're sweating. Take a deep breath. You
know? Yeah.
I haven't seen her in 10 years, Master. And Obi-Wan just sort of smiles at that. He doesn't really respond. I like the scene. It's great. You know, obviously, not only does it give us an idea of where their relationship is, the master-apprentice friendship relationship is, but it also implies Anakin's as nervous as a school kid, you know, going to ask his first crush out to prom.
Yeah. And I wonder why, you know, Obi-Wan seems to be okay with that. He's playful with it. I wonder if, you know, does Obi-Wan suspect that Anakin has those types of feelings, or or what? Like, because Obi-Wan almost celebrates it there, but then a few moments later is going to chastise him for having those feelings.
I think he's just going to let it play out. Obviously, okay. Anakin's got the whole crush and everything. Maybe if he sees her after 10 years, it's not going to be quite what he thought it was. Or maybe she'll turn him down and that'll be the end of it. That sort of thing, you know. You know, but obviously Anakin's very one-track minded when it comes to this sort of thing. So doesn't quite work out the way Obi-Wan anticipated. At this point, it's simple nerves and jitters about seeing someone you were kind of attracted to, you know, and that you've built up in your mind after 10 years. So I don't think Obi-Wan sees anything dangerous in that yet. Later when Anakin starts pursuing it more, that's when it becomes an issue though.
Right. That's a good point. So they step off the elevator and are greeted by our wonderful, lovable Jar Jar Binks.
Arby! Mises are smiling to see you, sir. I have to say...
Just roll right into it, Jason.
I have to say, Jar Jar's animation in Attack of the Clones is even better than it was in Phantom Menace.
Oh, for sure.
The CG animation there, and especially the way that his costume behaves is really good. And then, of course, later on during the scene where we get the shot of him taking a gulp at the awkwardness of the situation, it's a great example of good CG. But I don't know. I think the way he's done looks so much better. Not that it was bad in Phantom Menace, but it just looks so much more realistic here in Attack of the Clones.
Sure. Yeah, and I actually like Jar Jar being here because, again, it does. It's a quick little callback to the adventures we had in the last movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also a callback to the innocence of the last movie. Again, we talk about this every time we talk about Phantom Menace, Jason.
Yes.
We talk about, you know, the just that feeling of innocence that permeates that movie. Mm-hmm. And I think bringing Jar Jar back, especially, you know, shortly before, if you think about it this way, if Jar Jar in a way, and I think he is kind of innocence personified.
Yeah.
And notice that his involvement, it dramatically decreases each film. Now, you know, yes. Some people are like, oh, it's because George Lucas knew people hated him. So maybe, but I kind of don't think George Lucas gave a flying, you know, Mustafar what the hell people thought. So I don't think that's quite it. I really do think it's kind of a thematic statement of Jar Jar becomes less and less of a
integral.
Prominent, yeah, integral role because the innocence of this galaxy is being destroyed.
Yeah.
So I like that, right? Jar Jar shows up. It's a reminder of those happy times, you know, when they all, you know, teamed up and defeated the enemy and celebrated together. It reminds us of that. And then also, it's immediately followed up, too, by when Padme's like, Annie? You know, and my
she
goodness.
She uses his kid name.
Right. My goodness, you've grown. And when she says that and she says Annie, you hear Anakin's theme in the background. So, again, mm-hmm. which is, to me, it's the theme of innocence. And it's so good. It's just, it's right off the bat, it's reminding us of all the goodness we came from.
Uh-huh.
Which is falling apart.
Yeah. And then, of course, Anakin steps in it, you know, and so have you. Will grow more beautiful, I mean. Well, for a senator, I mean.
I mean, I have no idea I had a girl.
I mean, I've never talked to a girl like this before, ever. So, hi.
Hi. How are you?
How are you? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
I'm so out of my depth.
Right. Right. And then she slams him, you know, after he's trying to be all flirty, and she just kind of giggles and says, Annie, you'll always be that little boy I knew on Tatooine. You know, right. Like, oh, man, Anakin, that sucks.
Right.
She sees you as nothing but a fun-loving little boy.
Yeah, she's like, oh, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
How we've been able to reunite after all this time. Isn't that sweet? Yeah. And Anakin's like, that's not what I was going for.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. And, like, she means that with sincerity. Like, oh, you know, you're always that sweet little kid I knew. And Anakin resents that. You know, that's she doesn't mean it that way, but it's a slap in the face to him. But also think of it too. It's like he's trying to run away from that person, though. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm not that person anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the rest of Act One, you know, the whole chase of Zam Wessel is Anakin trying to prove himself to her.
Right.
And that starts up right here too, right? Like Anakin, you know, Obi-Wan's like, well, we're here to protect you. You know, we're going to do what the council told us. And Anakin's like, we will find out who's trying to kill you, Padme. I promise you.
Exactly.
We will not exceed our mandate, my young Padawan learner. I meant that in the interest of protecting her, of course.
Of course. I mean, investigation is implied in our mandate. You know, we see Anakin likes to be flexible with rules and guidelines.
Yes. So, right off the bat, we get a sense of the fact that Obi-Wan was like that in Phantom Menace too, right? I mean, he was a rigid character who had a very flexible master. But Obi-Wan's rigidity, I don't know if that's a real word, I don't care.
Rigidity is the correct word there.
Excellent. That's kind of still stuck with him. And Anakin is really just, he's going to try, to me, it's not like, he's really just trying to prove himself here. You know, again, for the rest of this first act of the movie, if not much the rest of the movies, Anakin's, again, think of a teenage boy. He's just trying to flex his muscles and show off.
Yeah.
You know, but he's trying to be cool and mature about it. Like, don't worry, we're going to find out who it is.
Exactly.
And Obi-Wan's trying to rein him back in and say, that's not what we're here for, kid. That's not what we're here for.
Exactly. Exactly. It's Anakin is so bent on this proving himself and showing Padme that he's not that little boy on Tatooine, that he's so much more, that he's going to do anything, even if it means completely disregarding rules, even though he's sort of just bending them at this point. Of course, Obi-Wan, we know how much he likes his rules, especially in episodes 1 and 2. He's a little more flexible with them by the time we get to episode 3. I feel like sometimes during, you know, the Phantom Menace, Obi-Wan felt like he was the master and Qui-Gon was the Padawan because of the way that Qui-Gon treated the rules. And now he's got an apprentice who's the exact same way. And while we saw earlier how Obi-Wan and Anakin are very on very friendly terms, and there's sort of this brotherly, you know, back and forth that happens, when it comes to their job, Obi-Wan is still very set in his ways.
Yeah. That's a good point. So Padme goes off to bed. Anakin's bummed because she doesn't seem to remember him. When she remembers him just fine, he just doesn't like her memory of him.
Right.
You know, he wants her to have new memories of him. And again, Obi-Wan sweeps in and he's like, you know, be mindful of your thoughts. She was pleased to see us. You know?
Yeah. And Jar Jar assures Anakin that no, she's happy. I mean, that's I haven't seen her smile in a long time, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, you know, it's like she's happy. I haven't been seeing her in a long old time. You know, she's obviously been very concerned and stressed about the separatist issue and the military issue. And so the fact that she was smiling and happy to see them just sort of, you know, shows how much she has thrown herself into her work at this point and how happy she is to see old friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give yourself a break, Anakin.
Yeah. It becomes nighttime, and perfectly as night, you know, comes up, we get to see the shadows lurking in Jango and Zam Wessel. And, you know, that wasn't their only attempt. They're not going to give up quite so easily. They're going to go after Padme again.
Oh, yes.
And we get an insinuation that obviously even Django's not the one behind it. You know, my client's getting impatient, you know.
Right. Django is the one that was hired. But because this is a very visible and dangerous proposition, he's contracted it out to Zam. Obviously, she'll get some sort of cut from his fee. And I think part of this is, as we'll later learn, since Jango is the template for the clone army, he's trying to help keep up appearances in case, you know, if he was discovered trying to assassinate Padme, and then, as later happens, we discover that he's also the template for the clone army, that brings up so many questions that they don't want to have to answer.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have Anakin talking about his restless sleeps because of dreaming about his mother. You know, dreams pass in time. That I don't know why. I was obsessed with that quote when Attack of the Clones came out. Now, again, until Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones was the most I'd seen a Star Wars movie in theaters. I think I saw it 6 times, maybe 7. I can't remember. But I was obsessed.
Force Awakens, not Phantom Menace, right?
Yes. I mean Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
There we go. We're all over the place here. Yeah. But yeah, I saw Attack of the Clones 6 or 7 times in theaters. I loved that movie when it came out. And I don't know why. I just loved that dreams pass in time. That year, for like, we got to like put quotes in the yearbook, and that was my quote: "Dreams pass in time." I don't know why. I loved it. Makes no sense, but I do like this scene because again, it shows another aspect of the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan. You know, that first instance we see them joking around, and then we see, like you kind of pointed out, Jason, it's still when it comes time for business, Obi-Wan is all business, and he has to rein Anakin in. But now again, we see that more tender side of their relationship, where Anakin, you know, indicates that he's stressed, and you know, he's starting to have these recurring dreams about his mother. So Obi-Wan, and I think Obi-Wan doesn't really have a clear response. Again, like, that dream is passing time. It's kind of dismissive, and I don't think it's dismissive in a malicious way. I think it's because Obi-Wan doesn't get it. Like, no Jedi can. Anakin is unique. No one can understand what he's feeling because none of them have ever felt that.
Right. And Anakin sort of takes it as dismissive because he throws it right back in Obi-Wan's face. You know, I'd much rather dream about Padme.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... Anakin feels probably a little bit irritated at how Obi-Wan doesn't get it. So he's, you know, I'd much rather dream about Padme. And that's when they get off on this whole other discussion about be mindful of your feelings and the whole discussion about politicians and how Obi-Wan says they shouldn't be trusted at all.
You're right. And Obi-Wan's been around the block a lot longer than Anakin has. He's speaking to him from wisdom. But yeah, you know, it's almost like, to me, Anakin's response of, you know, Obi-Wan, like, not knowing how to respond is, so he kind of just, like, he says something that would almost, like, aggravate Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a kid with their parent. When the parent can't really give you what you're looking for, you get angry, so you kind of lash out subconsciously. And in a way, that's almost what Anakin's doing. He's kind of subconsciously lashing out and just saying, all right, fine, well, I'll switch the subject to something you definitely don't want to know. But, you know, I'd rather be dreaming about Padme. And we probably wouldn't be talking politics. You know, we'd be talking about aggressive negotiations, if you know what I'm saying. Mm. You know, and Obi-Wan quickly reminds him, like, you know, careful of those thoughts. Like, you know, and what's interesting is, you know, knowing with the Clone Wars about Satine, right? Obi-Wan has had that relationship already. He knows what it's like to be in love. But I think, again, the difference is this is something I never liked about the Satine story. I liked they made Obi-Wan feel like a little more human, the fact that he could fall in love. I never liked that he said, I would have left the Order for you. Because I don't think that's Obi-Wan. Not at all. Yeah. And if it was, he has no right to speak to Anakin the way he does.
Well, the thing is, and this is pure speculation based on that quote and what we see in The Phantom Menace, maybe at the point that they were, you know, initially together and had that sort of romance, at that point, perhaps he might have.
That's a good point.
But when that didn't happen – and he went back to the Order, he dove so much far into his studies that now, obviously, he wouldn't. He would never leave the Order. And perhaps that's why he's so by the book when we get to him in Phantom Menace.
Sure. That's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's almost like, you know, that's a great point, actually, because it's an overcompensation in a way.
Right.
He's so freaked out by what he almost did that mm-hmm. He overcompensates in another way. That's just on a side point. it's kind of sometimes like religious fanatics. They're usually people that, like, earlier in life, they were kind of like crazy and wild, and then all of a sudden they feel super guilty, so they overcompensate by becoming these religious zealots and condemn anybody who ever act like that. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan's certainly not a zealot, but that is a really good way of looking at it, Jason, because I do remember, right, like, when he first met Satine, it's when he was Qui-Gon's apprentice, so he's a much younger, different man.
Right.
So he gets what it's like to fall in love, and he himself even thought about it, but then realized, like, whoa, no, I shouldn't, like, and it doesn't happen, so then he realizes, like, well, I should have never let that happen, and he, you know, buckles up.
Right.
You know, and then they get in, you know, they get into this kind of discussion about politicians and whatnot. And to me, the only thing that's kind of unique about it is the fact that even, you know, Obi-Wan's, you know, Anakin basically comes to Palpatine's defense. You know, Palpatine is a good, you know, Palpatine is a politician. I think he's a good man. You know, like Anakin is going to defend Palpatine. So again, it's clear in this movie that there's a relationship between these characters. And, you know, that relationship is a very fond bond that, you know, Anakin's going to defend.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, of course, this is where we also learn that Palpatine has stayed in office longer than his terms. Because mm-hmm. That's what Obi-Wan throws back is, you know, Palpatine's a politician. I've noticed that he's, you know, very keen at, you know, playing to the whims of the Senate and has stayed in power far too long, you know, that sort of thing, you know, which of course we don't hear very much of because it's coming from the other room where we're watching, you know, the assassin droid try and kill Padme.
Right. So, well, here's the thing. R2-D2, who saves the day all the time, for some reason can't stay running the whole time. Like, you can't detect these two little worms. Come on, R2, get it together. You can fly and, like, disable like an entire Starfleet with like the turn of your little whistling arm, but you can't detect two damn worms. Come on, R2.
Well, he did, but they were hiding when he was scanning.
Oh, come on. Inspector Gadget R2, only one convenient.
go Gadget R2-D2.
Yeah. You know, obviously it's great that they're, you know, they sense that something's going on. They rush in. Anakin, very precise cuts, by the way, these two little worm things. He doesn't even singe her clothes.
No.
Cuts her in half. But then Obi-Wan just throws himself out the window impulsively. And to me, it shows Anakin's kind of rubbed off on Obi-Wan. I don't know that that's something Obi-Wan would have done if there was no Anakin in his life.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, it's it's a very un-Obi-Wan move to make. It's something Anakin would have done, for sure, but Anakin's too busy going, oh, hi, I almost, you know, cut your face, Padme, you know?
Yeah.
getting those cahoons. So Obi-Wan jumps out the window instead. But yeah, it is one of those things where, especially after Anakin is the one, you know, promoting the investigation, and Obi-Wan's like, we will not exceed our mandate. Obi-Wan's the one that, you know, flings himself out the window to track down where this droid is headed.
Right. Yeah.
And then what do you think of this scene? I know you're not a fan of chase scenes, but just the fact that they're, you know, whizzing through Coruscant at night. I know you love Coruscant and big cities and all that stuff.
Yes.
The setting, what do you think of it?
I love it. I mean, again, I think that the CG doesn't hold up that well on Attack of the Clones, but it's best at night. So it looks pretty cool. Revenge of the Sith Coruscant is where it's at. I love it. Attack of the Clones Coruscant is getting there. Daytime, it definitely looks like a computer game. At night, at least, it looks like a somewhat mix between a computer game and a real city. I like parts of the chase. The thing about the chase that I like most, though, is the first time I saw that movie, I was like, well, no matter what, Anakin's going to take care of this. Just because, like, we just know Anakin is such a, like, incredible pilot. As soon as he goes and hops in that speeder, I knew Obi-Wan was going to be okay.
Right.
You know, I just love watching Anakin behind the wheel because it's just so innate for him.
Right.
And it does. I mean, visually, it's pretty cool. You know, you get to see a lot of Coruscant and you know, they throw in obviously kind of some shocked pedestrians. Again, it's a longer chase scene, so I'm not crazy about it. I prefer this by far to the asteroid chase in Attack of the Clones. But it's okay. I don't love it and I don't hate it.
Right. You're just not a fan of chase scenes in general.
Yeah. I'm really not. Even like I was just watching Force Awakens the other day. I hadn't watched it in a little while, and I hadn't watched it in a while, so I watched it twice in like 3 days. But even like I loved the first time I saw that movie. I loved that chase scene. You know, when they take the Falcon and they're leaving Jakku. But already at this point, I'm just like, I could do without. Like I don't like chase scenes. I've never liked chase scenes. But you know, the Attack of the Clone ones, it's fun. It looks cool. But I do like, you know, again, it's a point though where we get some insight into the two characters, right? Anakin he's loving this. He loves the excitement and the thrill of this. Whereas right. Obi-Wan is again, he's just kind of this more rigid character of like, pay attention, Anakin, just follow her. And Anakin's like nosediving, ha, 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 you know,
yep.
And has to pull up last minute, you know.
Right.
Anakin is exactly what Luke was. Adventure, excitement, a Jedi craves not these things. You know, that's all exactly. I can think of.
But that is exactly what Anakin is craving. You know, the adventure, the excitement. You know, he loves it. He doesn't get to flex this muscle very often. And so he's taking full advantage of it.
Right. Right. Do you like this chase scene?
Yeah. Yeah. If a chase scene is done well, I like chase scenes in general, you know, but this one, I like this because we get to see so much of Coruscant in it. Mm. And then of course all the different obstacles that they have to, you know, traverse is a very George Lucas thing to do. You know, obviously, you know, you see it in Indiana Jones all the time, you know, that it's one thing after another. And while this one isn't quite like that to the extreme that like we get in an Indiana Jones movie, you know, it's similar. You know, we have to dodge oncoming traffic. Then Obi-Wan's falling and Anakin has to catch him. Then we have to track down the bounty hunter again. We go through the power couplings and the electricity. Then we're splitting up and Anakin has to dive out the speeder onto hers in order to catch up. You know, it's not quite as, you know, almost ridiculous as we get in Indiana Jones, but it's a very George Lucas thing to do. So I'm a fan of it in that respect. So I also love when Anakin is on Zam's speeder and the scene where she takes off her face cover. And then when he's on the speeder and he slides past her window and her face changes,
mm-hmm.
That was something in the theater when I first saw it. I was like, "Wait, did I just see that?" You know?
It's so subtle,
right?
Yeah. And my favorite part of the chase sequence is the very beginning and the very end when mm-hmm. Anakin does, like, he just throws himself out of the speeder and he's just like grappling on top of the speeder. He just, the way he like stabs into it with his lightsaber, to me, it's very aggressive. And to me, it boils down to, again, the fact that Anakin he wants to figure out who this is that's trying to kill Padme and prove himself to Padme. He wants to get to the bottom of this. Yes, obviously for the main reason of protecting her, but also to say, like, I'm not just little Annie anymore.
Right. Right. I was the one who saved you.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So, and then it leads into, to me, one of the best scenes in the film, which is kind of the club scene.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember Hayden Christensen saying how he liked filming the sequence where he's chasing Zam through the streets into the club because he just got to like run and like knock over extras and all that fun stuff. He said it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, in the blooper reel from the movie, you see when they're filming that scene, he wipes out.
Yes.
Which is funny. So obviously, you know, he's on this just like, you know,
adrenaline high,
just racing through the city. You know, the ship crashes. They both fall off. He's running after her, bumping into people. And then you got Obi-Wan who just like pulls up casually, parallel parks the speeder. he's fine. And he just like casually jaunts over to Anakin, who's still running at full speed. Anakin, you know.
Right.
You know, patience. Use the force. Think. You know.
We get the lightsaber speech. Right. This weapon is your life.
I tried, Master. Why do I get the feeling you're going to be the death of me, Anakin?
Oh. Don't ever say that, Obi-Wan, because it might turn out to be true. Right.
But again, this whole chase thing, again, it's highlighting the difference in these characters. Obi-Wan is a calmer character. He is more centered. He is more force-centered in a way. Whereas, again, like kind of what we were talking about, even when we were talking about the matchup, Jason, you know, Anakin's interaction with the Force is already very Sith-like. He uses it for power. He uses it for extra power and extra speed probably while he was running. But he's not listening to it. That's the difference. He uses it. He doesn't listen to it. Right. I don't think he's quite like, he's not a Sidious where he's trying to control and manipulate it, but to him, it's just, it's about using it for its power. It's not necessarily about communing with it. And you see that cause he's all in a tizzy and Obi-Wan has to be that voice that calms him and, you know, remind him to use the Force. And again, this is, you know, one of the things that I think is sorely lacking, understandably, in the prequels, but we don't get a lot of Force teaching outside of Phantom Menace. This is the only point at which we see Obi-Wan in any way even really mention something about using the Force to Anakin. But again, it's just this way of like calming down, use it to be more, you know, centered.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And they waltz in and, you know, Anakin reveals like, okay, well, this is a changeling. We got to be extra careful. And just Obi-Wan just starts, you know, walking off. Where are you going, master?
For a drink.
I love that. Absolutely. You know,
they were arguing about using Padme as bait earlier, and now Obi-Wan's going to use himself as bait.
Right.
And of course, it works.
Yep. Yep.
After, of course, sending someone home to rethink his life and all that.
Probably one of the funniest scenes in Star Wars.
It's so great. You know, you want to buy some death sticks?
You don't want to sell me death sticks.
I don't want to sell you death sticks.
You want to go home
and rethink your life. I want to go home and rethink my life.
And then Ewan McGregor acts it so perfectly. Even when I want to go home and rethink my life. And he starts off, Obi-Wan gives like a little nod of like assurance. Like, yep, I did it.
Yep.
Good. But I also like the scene, though, when Anakin is walking through the club looking for her. You know, there's a shot where there's like these two women standing next to each other, and they look very attractive. And they kind of they check him out, which I like. Like, I like lately. That Anakin. Yeah, Anakin is, he's an attractive Jedi. Mm-hmm. And he's hot. You know, the ladies of this club recognize him. Even though he's a Jedi, they still think he's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
So I always liked that. I liked that he's getting checked out. That he is a Jedi that's noticed.
Right. Right. Even as a Padawan, everyone has to take notice of Anakin.
Right.
You know, for one reason or another, whether it's a skill, the fact that he's a chosen one, or the fact that he's just attractive. Right. You know,
a little of both.
All of that.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You can't help but notice Anakin.
Right. When I remember some friends from back when I was teaching, a couple friends that I worked with had never seen Star Wars. So like over a month's time, they would come over like once a week and we did the movies and we did the originals. And then we went back into the prequels. When I was watching Attack of the Clones, one of my friends, she was like, why is Padme in love with him? He's whiny. He's a jerk. He's got temper issues. And then my other friend just goes, well, it's because he's hot. <It's> there's got to be more to it than that. And that's the thing. Again, like Anakin isn't, he's like overly innocent and good in episode one. And then episode two, he's just kind of like this whiny jerk. So it's weird that she would fall in love with him. I can see that point to an outside observer. But anyway.
But we'll get to that when we talk about act two.
Right. And so anyway, we get into, you know, she tries to sneak up on Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's, you know, he uses his excellent finisher move of disarming people. Mm-hmm. And
literally.
Yeah. And then actually my favorite one-liner in Star Wars still to this day, I guess it's not a one-liner, but like closing line is Jedi business, back to your drinks. I used to say that all the time when that movie came out. And even like when I turned 21 or when I'd go out to bars and stuff, feel like if people would like, I don't know. I would just be like, Jedi business, back to your drinks.
You know, right.
I love that line. It's just so like casual. Like, it's clear that Jedi are around Coruscant. People aren't surprised by that. And like, don't mind this. We'll handle it. And they take it out back, you know?
Right. Right. And of course, Anakin gets very intense and in her face about the information that they need. And Zam is about to reveal something, and Jango, who's been watching from the shadows, silences her.
Yeah, she gets sniped.
Mm.
Yeah.
With a dart, nonetheless.
Right. That's a cool... I've always loved that shot of Django taking off. It's such a cool-looking shot.
It is.
A rocketeer flying away. So then, of course, we finally get our first scene here in the Jedi Council Chamber. And it's
one of the very few scenes in the actual council chamber itself in this movie, if not the only one. I don't recall.
I think it is the only one. You're right. They explore much of the Jedi temple in this movie, but the council chamber is only seen in this one scene. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I guess at the very end. Even though Yoda's is the only chair in there. Mm-hmm. But essentially to me, it's the assignment scene. They're going to be broken up, and Anakin's getting his first assignment. And they clearly must, trust him to some degree. It's weird that this is his first assignment. Apparently, Obi-Wan hasn't made it clear to them how he feels about Padme.
Right.
I don't know. Or maybe they're doing it as a way of testing him. I'm not sure. But they're both going to, they're going to be broken up. And Obi-Wan's going to become, Detective Obi-Wan, Law and Order. they're going to go their separate ways. But I like it, too, because Anakin speaks up and says, you're going to take Padme to Naboo. Well, it's going to be very difficult to get her to leave because she's here for a very specific reason and a very impassioned reason. Mm-hmm. And when he speaks up, there's that great shot of Mace Windu, just like how he kind of almost like he's rolling his eyes at him. Mace doesn't like Anakin, and Mace is a jerk. I hate Mace Windu. He's fine in episode one, but episodes two and three, he's just such a punk. I think Samuel L.
Especially Jackson. When it comes to Anakin.
Right. So they kind of order Anakin to go off to Palpatine and, talk to him. He'll make sure she leaves.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. You were saying Obi-Wan Law and Order. I was thinking Obi-Wan JCIS. I've been watching too much NCIS and NCIS Los Angeles recently. Anyways. But yes, then they do depart, and Anakin does have his meeting with the Chancellor, and I will talk with her. Senator Amidala will not refuse an executive order. I know her well enough to assure you that. And that's the end of their discussion on his mission. And then we get the scene where we realize that Anakin and Palpatine really do know each other quite well. Palpatine starts stroking his ego and planting more seeds of power in Anakin's mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exactly it. It's, Palpatine has been kind of building Anakin up. And, mm-hmm. there's a close relationship here between the two of them. And Palpatine is providing something that the Jedi Council specifically is not able to give Anakin. And that is a sense of support. And that's the thing. When you're told you're probably the chosen one, and then you're constantly being chastised by the leaders of the council, and then you can go to this person who sees the greatness in you and is kind of talking it up, of course Anakin's going to choose Palpatine. The council kind of does this themselves. They screw themselves by treating him like an outsider.
Right.
Whereas Palpatine isn't. He's this comforting voice that Anakin can go to and be heard, be listened to, and responded to. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I foresee you're becoming the greatest of all the Jedi, Anakin.
Even more powerful than Master Yoda.
So.
Ooh.
There you go.
Right. Then we have, of course, the scene about Jedi and their arrogance with Obi-Wan and Mace Windu walking alongside Yoda's hover chair.
yeah, I love that hover chair.
And I've just got this... Folks, in case you don't know, I've got the movie, playing on and off as we talk about it. And I've got it paused here as they're walking down this catwalk here. And the way that it's the scene is set up, and we've got, the view over the edge there down on the floor. And it looks like a painting.
Yeah.
The whole thing looks like a painting. Just had to comment on that. I hadn't actually taken that close of a look at it until now. But it looks like a painting, The way that the light is so soft and kind of diffused just gives it the impression of a very, almost like an oil painting or a watercolor painting or some sort.
Yeah. So. Well, see, to me, this is one of those scenes where the CG fails and it doesn't hold up. It looks so fake to me, this scene.
Yeah. It's I can see
three,
that.
Three characters clearly on a green screen. Like, yeah. It takes you, to a certain degree, it takes you out of it. But
I can I can understand people's opinion of that, but I almost like the stylizedness of it with the idea of it being a painting almost.
Yeah,
I kind of like that idea.
It'd be cooler if it had been like a partial set with a matte painting in the background. I think that could have looked cool, but instead they decide to green screen the whole thing and make it look fake as hell. But I don't know. I can be. I mean, I'll admit. Obviously, I'm a little critical of some of the CG in Attack of the Clones because it doesn't work a lot of times. And this, a lot of the shots inside the councils or in the Jedi temple, just, they look so fake. And I just don't like that. You know, that's when technology trumps the importance of a good story. You know, 'cause when you have bad CGI, it takes you out of the story. But that's life. I love this scene because it clearly showcases Yoda is able to indicate the problem with the Jedi Order is it's become mm-hmm. overly rigid and legalistic. You know, they're very arrogant. They think they know everything. And it's very clear that the Jedi Order has become something very political and very set in its ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what breeds arrogance. You know, they're setting themselves up to be humbled.
Right. So. They are. And it's one thing for Yoda to identify one of the problems. Yes. You know, arrogant, you know, his abilities have made well arrogant. Yes. Yes. A flaw far more common among Jedi, even the older, more experienced ones. You know, he identifies the problem or one of them anyways, but he doesn't really do anything about it.
Right. Yeah. Because even Yoda himself, I don't think he is blazingly arrogant.
No.
But he doesn't do much to quell the arrogance. And to me, no. Mace Windu is the personification of arrogance.
Of Jedi arrogance.
Of Jedi arrogance. Yeah, Mace Windu is the number one culprit of Jedi arrogance.
and he's the number two guy.
Yeah. So that's a problem.
Just a bit.
You know, and then but they do have that conversation closes with again a mention of this prophecy of the Chosen One. You know, Obi-Wan puts forth his nervousness about Anakin taking on this assignment by himself. He's not ready, and Mace says, you know, well, if the prophecy is true, then your Padawan is the only one who can bring the Force back into balance. So Mace still has this skepticism about it.
Right.
I don't know that he fully buys it. And they're very much keeping Anakin at arm's length. So I don't think Mace Windu really believes the prophecy because he's not willing to look into what it might actually mean. But it's important that it's brought up again. Because again, mm-hmm. it's a reminder that Anakin is a special Jedi. He's special not only in the fact that he was brought in at a later age, but more than that, he is this chosen one. And I think that's a great setup for this immediate scene after that, where you're going to finally hear how Anakin's responding to all that, all those expectations that in his mind are not being met.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's not entirely happy with the way everything's going, obviously. You know, he feels like, obviously, we get in the scene, he feels he's being held back. No one really appreciates who he is and his abilities. And I think, of course, he's still a young man. And so he thinks that, you know, it's my skills, my abilities, that's what proves who I am. You know, that proves my worth. It proves how good of a Jedi I am, is these skills, the abilities. He's still a young man, and he's got that mindset still. He's not, you know, older like, you know, Obi-Wan or Yoda, who knows. And it's more than just the skills and abilities that make the Jedi, so to speak.
Right. More than anything, it's the wisdom to know when to use that power.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so, well, we get the idea that Anakin feels a bit, you know, set aside. We also see that he's still immature in the way he approaches the issue as well. You know, while his feelings of being, you know, put off to the side, not fully appreciative, probably valid. The way he's approaching it and dealing with it is still not the best way either. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think another huge significant part of this scene is it's the first time he's alone with Padme. And mm-hmm. what does he do? He immediately kind of unloads to her. I think he immediately feels that attachment to her and this sense of comfort. You know, he's never talked like that to Obi-Wan, and we can assume he probably doesn't. Mm-hmm. Certainly not to probably Yoda or Mace Windu. Padme is someone he feels he can immediately trust, and he does. He just opens up and shares with her what are his burdens right now. You know, I'm ready to be somebody more, but they think I'm unpredictable. Well, that's exactly right. You are. You know, he's not mm-hmm. ready for the trials, but he's so blind to that. But, you know, again, he's a young man who, from the day he entered that order, was told he's the chosen one, and he doesn't see himself as being anything special.
Right.
And obviously, when we get into Act 2 with the tragedy of his mother's, we're going to realize that, you know, that's really going to set something into motion for him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I love Padme's response. We see that Padme is the wiser character. You know, she's able to point out, like, you know, oh, well, I love that. You know, all mentors seem to see more of our faults than we're capable of. You know,
right.
She recognizes that, you know, a mentor is meant to help you grow. And Anakin immediately, like, he calms down. You know, I know. And, you know, he does show a little bit of wisdom there, too. And, you know,
But then again, the wisdom is coming from Padme.
Exactly.
And I think that one of the key things on the other side of the coin here is that while Anakin sort of unloads to Padme, Padme is willing to try and help him.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees this, oh, well, he trusts me. And I think that's sort of also helps her to start seeing him in a different light, is the fact that he trusts her so much to reveal this to her. And obviously something he's not going to reveal to Obi-Wan. You know, issues and gripes about his mentor is not something he's going to talk to his mentor about.
Right.
So the fact that he's revealing these things to her probably, you know, intrigues her. And the fact that he trusts her with that is probably also one of the reasons why Padme starts, you know, beginning to walk down this path with Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course he ends it very awkwardly by staring into her eyes. Yeah. And she says, please don't look at me like that.
Why not?
Why not? It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Another slam. Sorry, m'lady.
Sorry, m'lady.
Yeah.
But he's almost like, I hit a nerve.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks it's somewhat funny.
Right, right.
Obviously the expression on his face.
Yeah, and I think she is. She's uncomfortable, not so much because she thinks he's being creepy. She's uncomfortable because he's trying to elicit some emotional response from her, and she doesn't have time for that.
And maybe it is eliciting that emotion, and right. She doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, so she's smacking it down.
She's like, no, this shouldn't be happening. It makes me uncomfortable. You know.
Move on.
Move on. Move along.
Move along.
Move along.
Well,
and then we're going to wrap up our Act 1 discussion with their leaving Coruscant scene here.
Yeah, and nothing huge there. I mean, they're going to part ways, and, you know, Padme is still, you know, she doesn't want to go, but she's doing what she thinks is her duty. Mm-hmm. And I like that. She, you know, there's that little line there, you know, I think it's Dorme. Is that the handmaiden? Right. So she's like, I'm worried. What if they realize you've left the capital? She goes, well, my Jedi protector will have to prove how good he is. And you see Anakin turn and smile, you know, because, like, that's exactly what he wants. He wants to prove to her how capable he is. But immediately mm-hmm. Obi-Wan, you know, just chimes right in. Anakin, don't do anything without first consulting myself or the council.
Like, don't get too showboaty.
Yeah, exactly. So it's immediately like putting Anakin back in his place. And I think to some degree, Anakin's probably looking forward to this too, to just kind of get away from that and get to kind of do things on his own.
Right.
So off they go.
Right. And of course they talk about how, you know, interesting this is and first time on their own. And well, at least we've got R2 with us, which I'm like, yes, because R2 can handle anything. But no, I'm kidding. But it's more interesting to me, the response back at the ship with Obi-Wan and Captain Typho, because Obi-Wan is concerned that Anakin's going to do something foolish. And Captain Typho just sort of shakes his head and like, I'd be more worried that she'd do something than him, mm-hmm. you know. Because yeah. we've seen what Padme is capable of doing in The Phantom Menace, you know. She's right. Her plan to take back Naboo, pretty daunting.
Yeah.
And she's not afraid to get in the middle of things. So, yeah. It's funny. These two people who get them outside of their normal range of their normal environment and their normal expectations on what they should be doing, and the way that they improvise together may not be the safest thing in the world.
yeah. So there you go. There's kind of our act one and take on episode two, Attack of the Clones.
Mm-hmm. Stopping there is the next scene is the beginning of Obi-Wan's investigation, and that sort of kicks off
act two.
Act two.
Yeah. Act two is the love story and the investigation. So, which is a very long act two. That's going to be a long episode.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to
have a lot happens too. There's a lot of stuff packed in there.
That is true.
But Jason, before we go, we have mm-hmm. a couple of things to talk about. I think the first one worth mentioning is our poll.
Yes. So our new poll that we're going to do here is who is your favorite bounty hunter? Obviously, we saw two of them at work here at the beginning of Attack of the Clones with Sam Wessel and Jango Fett. But I'm sure there are many other bounty hunters that claim the spot of favorite in many different fans' hearts. So I'm curious to see who your favorite bounty hunter is. We're pretty sure, you know, that's a good guess as to who, you know, the first, you know, two or three are going to be. But I just want to see what our Larians think.
Faux show. I'm pretty sure I know who's going to be the frequent on the top of this list, but I'm curious to see if anybody, you know, has any fun, unique things to say about bounty hunters, because there's so many in Star Wars, obviously.
Right.
But Jason, before we go as well, I want to talk about a new segment we're going to start here in the Wampa's Lair starting next week.
Yes.
I'm very...
this is exciting.
Yeah. So this... I don't know. I swear, the Force, it moves in mysterious ways. I just kind of had this idea the other day of trying to, you know, let you, our listeners, our Larians, have a bigger involvement in the show. And it just kind of came to me that one of my favorite things to do when I'm at a Star Wars celebration is talk to people about some of their favorite things about Star Wars, things that they love about these films. And as probably many of you know, Jason and I both are huge fans of Scott Rifen's show, My Star Wars Story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he does a great job of getting a really in-depth look into how people have seen their Star Wars story evolve. So this is kind of inspired by that, but a little different. So this new segment called Tales of the Larians, which you probably, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, you probably saw the awesome logo Joe Hogan put together for us.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a new monthly segment where we invite you, our listeners, the Larians, to let us know if you'd like to be on the show. And essentially what this is I've come up with, I think, 7 or 8 questions that I'm going to ask you. So you'd call us up on Skype. So you will need Skype in order to do this. If you're interested in doing this and you don't have Skype, just go ahead and download Skype. It's not hard. It'll either be with Jason and me or just me. I'm going to do the first one without Jason because Jason's going to be out of town for Phoenix Comic Con next week, which he'll talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially what Tales of Larians is just ask you some of the things that you really love about Star Wars. I've come up with a script of questions, so everybody on is going to kind of have the same questions for the most part. I'm guessing that these little segments that will last anywhere from a half an hour to an hour at the tops. So again, My Star Wars Story, it's a much bigger time commitment, and it's also backed up the wazoo because it's such a great show. So we wanted to give you guys a chance to kind of tell kind of an abridged version of your Star Wars story, more of a, what do you love about Star Wars? So some of the questions, for instance, that'll be features like, who's your favorite character? What's your favorite lightsaber duel? Some more in-depth questions of like, you know, what has Star Wars brought to your life? So things like that we'll ask you. And this new segment, this is about you guys. So whoever's on, the show is not about Jason or I. It's just about us asking a question so that one, we can get a better sense of how many people have, you know, such a diverse love of Star Wars. I think this is going to be a great opportunity for us to all share our love for Star Wars and get to hear some fun stuff from just you, our listeners. So next week for the pilot episode, of course, I wanted to go with somebody I know well. So I am getting Joe Hogan on. He's going to be our guinea pig in case it totally sucks. We can just blame Joe. But Joe's going to be on next week to do the first episode of Tales of the Larians. But if you are interested in being part of this, if you want to be on this show, I highly encourage you to email us. We ask that you email us just so we can keep it everything coming in the same place. We can keep a more consistent list. And essentially what we're going to do is just start compiling. If you email us and say, I want to be on Tales of Larians, we're just going to kind of start putting you in order. It's going to be first come, first serve. And like I said, we're going to do this once a month. Anyone is welcome to be on it. Doesn't matter if you're young, old, in between. It doesn't matter. Anyone that's a listener of the show is welcome to be on this segment. So if that's something you'd be interested in doing, definitely shoot us an email. And in case you don't know what that is, our email is wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and we'll give you all of our contact information here in a minute. But before we wrap up the show, I do want to say, announce to everybody here, I've been talking about it with a lot of other people, but not on our show, which is weird because I should. I'm going to be at Phoenix Comic Con next weekend. That is the week of June 2nd through 5th, I believe are the exact dates. Yes, it's a Thursday through Sunday. Folding that into my vacation, which will be awesome. But I'm super excited about this. This will be the fourth year in a row I've gone to Phoenix Comic Con. Myself, Kyle Avery and Joey Letson, one of our Larians, will be hosting two panels at Phoenix Comic Con. One is going to be a Star Wars trivia panel, and the other is going to be, I believe it's called Secrets of Star Wars or something like that. And we're going to be talking about some of the unanswered questions from The Force Awakens and then where we go from here and what's coming next with Episode 8 and Rogue One. So that panel for sure I plan on recording and should be available as long as the audio quality is good enough. Will be available on the podcast in the coming weeks. So, but if you are in the area and you plan on going to Phoenix Comic Con, shoot us a message or something on Facebook. Let us know. And I would love to meet up and say hi. You know, that'd be great. So whether it's at one of our panels or just somewhere in the food court or something like that, I don't know. I think that'd be great. But Carl, if people want to weigh in on our poll, let us know about coming on to our Tales of the Larians, or get in touch with me about Phoenix Comic Con. Where are those places of communication?
Well, like I said, our email is wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslair. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampuslair.
It's just wampuslair.
Yeah, man, I screwed that up because I went out of order. Let me start that over again. Man, Jason, 184 episodes in, I screwed up. Email, wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslairpodcast. And Twitter is twitter.com/wampuslair. And also be sure to check us out on iTunes, subscribe to us. I want to give a huge thank you and shout out to Bradley Hall, who wrote a great review for us a couple weeks ago now. Sorry that we're a little late on thanking you. Thanks for your kind rating and review. And I believe Bradley was also on kind enough to write in for us all of the this background information on the posters episode that we did back a few episodes ago with Joe Hogan. So Bradley, a huge thank you to you for taking the time to do all of that.
Yeah. He got us all the exact names of each of the posters and the artists who did them. So we appreciate that. That was a labor of love, and we appreciate the attention to that and the fact that you decided to do that for us.
Absolutely.
Anything else, Carl, before we wrap up this episode?
All set, Jason.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 184, Attack of the Clones, Act 1. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.